Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Next week, the state Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in a ballot drop box case that could result in them overturning their decision from less than 2 years ago. Critics of drop boxes say they erode public confidence in elections, while supporters say they improve voter accessibility. We are talking with two voting experts today, Brenna Goddard, who is a staff attorney with the State Democracy Research Institute at the University of Wisconsin Law School, and Denise Jess, who is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired, as well as a leader in the Disability Vote Coalition. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you so much.
Brenna, I'm going to start with you. Tell us, what is a drop box? So how are we defining a ballot drop box?
A drop box is basically just a secure, locked box that voters can put their absentee ballots into. So they sign their ballot, put it in a sealed envelope, and drop it off. It's very similar to a post box, but they can vary in how they're set up.
And there's a difference between a manned drop box and an unmanned drop box?
Correct. So there can be unstaffed drop boxes that are more like the mailbox scenario, where it's, you know, the secure steel box bolted to the ground, typically under video surveillance. Or you can have boxes that have staffing at them. An example is a drive-through drop box situation, where staff have in some instances set up a drive-through with a box that voters can come by, put their ballot into the box, drive off.
Okay. Denise, 2020 seems so long ago, but in 2020 we were in the middle of a global pandemic, and many voters found ballot drop boxes to be very convenient, including voters with disabilities. Can you tell us how important those drop boxes were to voters with disabilities back then?
You bet. Thank you. So for those of us that have disabilities, there's so many barriers to voting, and returning the ballot safely and securely is one of them. Many folks during the pandemic, because of health concerns, didn't want to go into our polling places, and so wanted an option and needed an option for returning the ballot in a safe way. Many of the drop boxes might have been walkable for some folks with disabilities, or able to be reached mobily if you're using a mobility device. And so they actually added another opportunity and reduced the barrier of returning that ballot. And often they were close enough where you could get there without having to make transportation arrangements, because most people with disabilities, and many others, 31% of our state's population, are non-drivers. So having a conveniently located drop box really helped improve the success in returning the ballot, and especially during times when there were mail delivery concerns.
Well, and there was a pretty significant expansion of drop boxes during that 2020 time frame. The Wisconsin Elections Commission issued guidance on their use, and I think the data that's presented in this case say by spring of 2021, there were 570 drop boxes in 66 of 72 counties. Brenna, can you tell us, what did that guidance from WEC say? What did they put forward on how they needed to be used at the time?
Yeah, so like you said, there's this huge expansion in 2020 because of these concerns about in-person voting. And so these were something that had been used previously, but clerks really were coming to WEC and asking, what do we do? Can we use these? How do we use these? And so what the guidance said was, first and foremost, that these are allowed. That was their interpretation of Wisconsin law at the time, was that you can use drop boxes. And then they provided a lot of information about what that could look like, ways to make sure that it's secure. So, for example, we had talked about they could be staffed or unstaffed, they could be temporary or permanent. Another example of a possible scenario was, you know, a clerk or a clerk staff person sitting in City Hall with a drop box, or a mail slot on City Hall that's used for for example, taxes or utilities being used as a drop box for absentee ballots. And then with that, they had a lot of safeguards in place of, you know, these need to be secure, they need to be durable material if they're going to be unstaffed. If they're unstaffed, they need to be under video surveillance. Sort of all these security measures that they said should be in
place
to make
sure. There's a lot of detail in that guidance. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the briefs filed in this case that I found really interesting was from a group of county and municipal clerks, and they talked about how ballot drop boxes really aren't new in Wisconsin, that there's several communities that have been using them since the 1980s. In fact, one town referenced using a drop box slot to accept absentee ballots and utility bills for over 35 years. Will that history of the use of drop boxes come into play for the court in this case?
It may or may not. I think an important thing with deciding court cases and deciding what's legal under state law is if the court determines that something is not legal, it doesn't necessarily matter that it's been in place for a while, it's still illegal and they will decide that that has to stop. But where it can be more relevant is in determining what an ambiguous statute actually means. Sometimes courts will look at what clerks have been doing, what legislators understood the law to mean, and what practice has been for a long time in deciding how to interpret the statute in the first place.
Part of the reason why we're here having this conversation is that in 2022, the use of drop boxes was challenged in this case called Teigen versus Wisconsin Election Commission. What were the main concerns Brenna brought forward in that case back in 2022?
So the plaintiffs in that case were basically arguing that drop boxes just are not provided for under Wisconsin law, and so therefore could not be used.
Not even mentioned in the law.
They are not, and they aren't. They still aren't mentioned specifically in the law. And so they were looking at the relevant statute about returning absentee ballots, and their argument was that it only provides two methods for returning your ballot. One is via mail, which that one's pretty clear and not particularly debated. The other is returning it to your municipal clerk in person. And there is debate about exactly what that language means. And their argument was that that requires you to go in person to the clerk's office.
Which is an established place.
Yes, an established place. And there is some room for alternate sites that need to go through a legal process. But generally, the clerk's office, and you need to return it in person to a clerk or clerk staff, sort of in a person-to-person exchange.
Denise, in July of that year, 2022, the court actually then ruled to ban drop boxes. Disability and voting rights advocates at the time really condemned that issue. They said that the banning of drop boxes was discrimination against voters with disabilities and others. And can you tell us why?
Absolutely. Federal law as well as state law allows for voters with disabilities to seek assistance, an assistant of our choosing to be able to support the voting process. And so for voters with disabilities, if we can't access the ballot, we can ask for assistance by someone of our choosing other than an employer or a union agent. And that assistance could be in filling out the ballot. It could be in completing the certificate envelope. It could also be in returning the ballot. So disallowing the drop boxes meant that we could not legally hand over our ballot to have someone put it in the drop box on our behalf. And for folks with certain physical disabilities, you know, really being able to hand that ballot to someone that we trust to be able to get it into the drop box, get it into the mail, get it to the clerk is really imperative. And one of the things that happened in Teigen was that not only was the drop box question on the table, but who could return the ballot was also on the table. And that wasn't addressed in the final outcome of Teigen, which then threw absolute chaos into the ballot return assistance world, because clerks began interpreting the silence on that part of the issue about then people other than the voter could not return the ballot.
And put it in the mailbox.
And not even put it physically in the mailbox.
Has that confusion been rectified?
Sort of. So there was that eventually led to a suit called Carey versus Weck, which the federal court very clearly said that voters with disabilities have the right to assistance, and that assistance includes ballot return. And Weck issued guidance following that in September of 2022 that said that clerks needed to be able to accept the ballot when presented by someone of the voters choosing other than employer or union representative, and that they could not ask for, you know, they just needed to ask, are you returning this on behalf of someone with a disability? And if they were told yes, then they needed to verify that that person wasn't an employer or union steward. And assuming that that was a no, they needed to accept the ballot. But there's still uncertainty about that, even though WEC has declared that guidance, and even though the court has guaranteed the right of voters to use an assistant, even in the April election this year, we still have heard that clerks have questioned people, relatives or other folks, and saying you need to be the official, quote unquote, caregiver for this person, and nothing in the law requires an official caregiver. It's really the voter's choice about who returns that ballot. So while the guidance is there, clerks are still operating off of a variety of assumptions.
It's a gray area that remains. Mm-hmm. Brenna, in that particular case, the conservative majority of the court in the ruling said thousands of votes have been cast via this unlawful method, thereby directly harming the Wisconsin voters. What did they mean by saying that voters were harmed by the use of drop boxes?
So I think, well, first of all, just a minor caveat on that portion of the opinion, I believe, was only joined by three justices, and Justice Hagedorn, who joined with the lead opinion for part of it, didn't join for that part of the opinion. But I think those three justices, what they meant from some of the surrounding language is that it was damaging to public trust to have this process that people then found out was not a lawful process. And so really harming public trust in the election process. But I think it's important to note that they weren't saying, and there's no evidence that these drop boxes actually harmed or undermined the election outcome in any way. And so while it is important to foster public trust in the election, and that is an important goal, there wasn't an issue in this case of there actually being damage to drop boxes or ballots being taken.
No proof was prevented in that arena.
Correct. Yes. Yes. There weren't any instances reported of, you know, people interfering with the ballot drop boxes.
What's the summary of their ruling there? Unmanned, unstaffed drop boxes, or all drop boxes are now illegal?
It was basically that it has to be, you have to return the ballot to the clerk's office, and it has to be staffed. So you can't have drop boxes that are at other locations, even if they're staffed, and you can't have drop boxes that are unstaffed, even if they're at the clerk's office.
So that's the law as it stands today, and
Correct.
That's what's being argued in this priorities case, where oral arguments start next week. But we're less than 2 years since that Tegan case was decided. Is it unusual for a court to come back and reconsider a decision less than 2 years since they ruled?
Yes and no, I would say. I think this background principle of stare decisis is a really common one in courts. So this idea that you let prior decisions stand, even if as a current court you might disagree with them. And the goal there being really finality and stability to case law and to law in the state. Where you see courts depart from that is in a couple of cases. One is when court composition changes. And we've seen this at the U.S. Supreme Court. There is just a reality that when court composition changes, the new court does sometimes revisit prior
which
decisions.
We have a liberal-leaning mm-hmm. court now.
And the other instance in which we see this is when the court really thinks that the prior decision got it so wrong that the court really has a responsibility to change and address that prior decision. And this is something that we see advocated by both conservative and liberal justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, that if the prior decision was so objectively erroneous and clearly wrong, that it should be revisited, and the court actually has a responsibility to correct that.
Denise, have we seen voting rates of people with disabilities gone down without the availability of drop boxes? Can we say that?
I don't know if we can comfortably say that. Rutgers does a great job of tracking voting turnout for people with disabilities, and I haven't seen the latest numbers from them. But we know that there have been folks who have been, you know, anecdotally, folks who have been unable to cast their ballot for a number of reasons. They might have not been able to get someone to return it for them, or they were so scared about what the ramifications would be if they handed their ballot over to someone else, or just confused, or maybe even a family member or caregiver was uncomfortable engaging in the process. So anecdotally, we continue to have concerns that people are choosing not to vote because of fear.
Brenna, this case can get really complicated if you're looking at the weeds. As I was looking at the court filings, it seems, and you mentioned this before, there seems to be some attention to this idea of what does it mean to deliver to the municipal clerk. If you were going to boil down this case to one main question, is that the question?
I think in some form, yes. I think that is kind of the main question. The statute, it doesn't say, and I think just looking at the language, you know, it says it has to be mailed or delivered in person to the municipal clerk. And municipal clerk also includes their staff under the statute. And it doesn't say how to carry that out. And as the dissent pointed out in Teagan, it doesn't say it has to be delivered to the municipal clerk's office, which is what the majority held in that case. But it also would be somewhat absurd to interpret it extremely literally of you could go up to the municipal clerk in the grocery store and just hand them your ballot.
And that would be required. Yeah.
Yes. And so there is this question of what does this mean? But I think a slightly different take on that question that I think is the main issue is who gets to decide how people deliver ballots to the municipal clerk. And so the legislature obviously can do that, but there is some question with this statute of the degree to which they've specified that or not. And there are other statutes that provide a lot of discretion to municipal clerks in administering elections in determining how things should be carried
out.
What's
best in their community.
Exactly. And so there is an argument that it should be up to the municipal clerk to decide exactly how they can accept these ballots and what that process looks like.
So that's a lot of the conversation we'll likely be hearing in oral arguments next week.
Yes.
Okay. Denise, one plaintiff in this case, the Wisconsin Alliance for Retired Americans, says seniors are the most likely voters to need to vote absentee because of health issues or transportation challenges. I'm guessing the rates of voting absentee for voters with disabilities are pretty high.
They are very high for those exact reasons that were named by one of the plaintiffs. Transportation is a significant barrier for people with disabilities and older adults in getting to their polling places, particularly in rural Wisconsin, where transportation alternatives are quite close to zero. And especially if someone needs accessible transportation, if they use a mobility device, that transportation is even less available, particularly in our rural areas, but even in our urban areas. So health variability also makes a big difference. Someone might feel physically fine one day and not have the physical stamina to get to the polling place on another day. So, you know, not being able to trust one's ability to get there because of health is significant. And folks are so reliant on someone helping, you know, even helping physically get into the polling place and navigate it. And if they lose their helper, then they're stuck. And so, you know, that planning ahead, we always encourage our voters, make a voting plan. And then have a part C, A, B, and C, so that if one part falls apart, you've got another backup to be able to get that ballot cast.
Well, absentee voting really has surged over the last few decades, and certainly since the pandemic in 2020, we're showing some data from the Wisconsin Elections Commission. The Attorney General's brief in this particular case mentions that the share of Wisconsin voters casting an absentee ballot increased from around 6% to nearly 30% between 2002 and 2022. Denise, what can you say about the security of your absentee ballot?
What I can say is that I personally, I feel secure about putting it in a mailbox, putting it in a drop box, and having it delivered to the clerk. And as an avenue for voting for folks who need that absentee option, it is really, really critical. You know, I've heard folks talk about wanting to do in-person voting only, and for so many people that would disenfranchise us from being able to vote. The witness signature is still required on the envelope. If I have an assister, that needs to be noted on the envelope, so that certification process also helps guarantee that the ballot is going through, you know, good process for getting to into the clerk's hands.
Brenna, since that original Tegan ruling, there's been this shift in the balance of the court from a conservative majority to liberal majority. Does that give us a sense for how the court might rule in the case? Are there signs for which direction they're likely to go?
I think it is somewhat hard to say. I think there are definitely some factors to look at. One is that six of the seven justices are the same as the justices who decided Tegan. And so if they haven't changed their minds, which it's possible they have, but there is, it's reasonable to assume they might come down 3-3 on either side of how the case was decided previously and stick with their prior decisions. So then there's kind of two questions, assuming that influence the outcome of the case. The one is, how will the newest member, Justice Protasiewicz, vote? But the other is also this stare decisis issue that we were talking about before of how much do those justices in the dissenting view in Tegan think that this is a case that warrants overruling, or are they going to stick with the prior case law even if they think it was wrongly decided? And I think that we don't really know the answer on that yet.
Denise, when this was originally decided, one of your partners in the Disability Vote Coalition, Disability Rights Wisconsin, was quoted as saying that they support an expansion of secure, accessible absentee drop boxes to allow for increased participation of voters with disabilities and other Wisconsin voters. Is that your position, that drop boxes should not only be legal, but they should be expanded?
Yeah. I do believe that, you know, within, you know, in the city of Madison, they were placed at firehouses. And most neighborhoods have a firehouse. And so you could get to a drop box, you know, relatively easily. And so that expansion of them just creates greater opportunity for people to exercise their fundamental right of being able to vote.
I've seen also in the briefs the mention of the legislature's role in all of this. They did have an opportunity over these last nearly 2 years to fix this issue, to provide the guidance around what is a drop box, how should it be manned. Can you talk a little bit, Brenna, about the politics of this? Why didn't the legislature, why weren't they able to get something across the finish line?
I think it's hard for me to speak specifically to individual legislators' motivations, but I think as sort of a general issue, it's pretty interesting politics because it used to be a very bipartisan issue. Drop boxes can be really great at expanding access to voting in the entire state, the entire country, and in particular, you see in rural areas, it can be really beneficial where clerk's offices are open for shorter hours, and so getting there when it's staffed is really hard. And so it used to be this much broader bipartisan issue, and then in 2020, it really became a flashpoint for false claims of election fraud. And so there was a lot of targeting of drop boxes as fuel for theories about there being widespread election fraud, and we just haven't seen that borne out. There have been surveys and studies that drop boxes were not tampered with or interfered with in this way that would affect the election.
Is there any evidence that drop boxes favor one party or the other, either in Wisconsin or in any place that they're used?
No, they are really about increasing voter access across the board. And like Denise was talking about, the rural access issue is a really important one. And additionally, older voters really benefit a lot, vote absentee, and really benefit from having this expanded way to return their absentee ballots as well.
Denise, would you, your organization, support increased security for drop boxes and additional guardrails in the law?
I think that we would. You know, we really want the access to be able to vote, and we value the security of it. So, you know, that placement with camera surveillance, you know, that we talked about, Brenna talked about earlier, you know, that's really critical, making sure that they're well bolted, that they're, you know, very durable material, the things that are there already, but putting those into, you know, into statute, I think makes an enormous amount of sense. And then I also, if I could, want to just reply to that partisan question that you asked too, Lisa. And I really want to hit on the point that people with disabilities are immensely diverse as well. You know, they vote across party lines. You know, the one thing that brings us together as people with disability is disability, whether or not we acknowledge it. So I think sometimes there's a societal myth that people with disabilities lean in one direction more than another in the political voting world, and that's really, we see that as really untrue, that we're an incredibly, incredibly diverse population.
Brenna, what could a court ruling look like? Would is it possible the court would define how drop boxes would be used? Some people would say that would be legislating from the bench, but is that possible?
I think if the court overrules Teagan, it's most likely to just provide sort of a narrow explanation of what is legal versus what is not legal.
Under the current law.
Exactly. And so, for example, the prior case, you know, said they have to be staffed and at the clerk's office. So some sort of broad parameters like that, you know, can they be unstaffed and can they be away from the clerk's office, is something I would expect in a ruling like this. I would be surprised, and I don't think the court would get into a lot more of the specific details, things like how many you should have in a community, for instance. That's much more in the realm of WEC.
Do we expect a ruling before the August primaries? Is that likely?
I would think so. It seems like the court is willing to move quickly on this case, but it's hard to say for sure. But since oral argument is happening next week, we certainly do have the time for that.
Denise, I know there's another case pending for voters with disabilities. You've been consulting on this case. It's in Dane County Court. It deals with, it says absentee voting procedures are discriminate against voters with disabilities, and it's asking for the court to authorize use of an electronic ballot. Can you talk about that case?
Absolutely, and thank you for creating space for it. For those of us with blindness, other print-related disabilities, and fine motor disabilities, we're sent a paper ballot when we vote absentee that's not accessible to us. If, you know, remembering the teeny tiny font on a ballot, I can't see that. And so, and many folks with blindness can't, or reading disabilities. And then the ballot has to be physically marked. So anyone with fine motor disabilities is unable to do that. So we need to seek assistance. And this is a direct, in direct conflict with our constitutional right to be able to vote privately and independently. So while we're allowed assistance, we really have to sacrifice that constitutional right by finding someone that we can entrust with our ballot, who will read it to us fully, not leave sections of it out, who will then mark it according to our wishes. And for someone like me and the other plaintiffs, the plaintiffs who are named in the case, there's no way to verify that. If I can't see the ballot to mark it, I can't see the ballot to verify if it's been marked correctly. And so this, we've been trying to do this work in the legislature for the last number of years to have a legislative fix to allow for electronic transmission of the ballot so that we can interact with the ballot using screen reader and other adaptive technologies, and then be able to digitally return the ballot, knowing that Wisconsin law requires a paper ballot, but knowing that that systems exist where that ballot could be returned digitally and still be secure. And based on our non-success with the legislature after multiple years, it felt like this was another avenue for us to take to try to get this reconciled so that we can all have constitutional access to vote privately and independently.
Well, certainly another case to watch, as we mentioned, that's in the Dane County Court right now. We'll see if it makes it to the state. We're rounding out our time here. I want to talk, Brenna and Denise both, but I'll start with Brenna. What do you think are the implications of this case for the 2024 presidential election. You know, we are this purple state. Our elections are never won by large margins. President Biden won over former President Trump by 21,000 votes. Is this, if drop boxes are overruled, become legal again, is this something that could impact the result of the election?
I don't know that it will go that far. And the reason that I say that is because of some of the numbers in 2020 and 2022. So in 2020, 689 ballots arrived after Election Day at the clerk's office and so couldn't be counted. In 2022, when we didn't have drop boxes, that increased significantly and it was 1,600 ballots that arrived after Election Day, even though only a third of the number of absentee ballots were being voted absentee that year. That said, those numbers are still well under 21,000. And so I think it's not necessarily going to sway the outcome, but I think it is still very important that everyone's vote be counted. And so there are ways you can mitigate that by increasing education, making sure people know how early they need to mail it. The U.S. Postal Service recommends a week in advance of Election Day to make sure it gets there on time.
Denise, are you worried about this being a tipping point in the election?
I'm not sure that it'll be a tipping point in the election, but any time that there's a barrier that prohibits someone to vote, it's a source of grief for me personally and professionally, because anyone who can legitimately vote should have that right. And folks with disabilities, one in four Wisconsinites has a disability. And as we age, the likelihood of disability or dual disability increases. And so removing those barriers so folks who want access to the ballot and who can cast that ballot are able to do so and to have it counted.
Well, thank you both for joining us for this conversation today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.